We were just out at. So we were just out at the Ohio conference, and we know you guys had a meeting there. Unfortunately, Dr. Santee, who is your liaison to West Virginia and Ohio, he got to your meeting, but you guys had already ended. So when we were talking with Curtis, we basically said we'd be happy to come on and just kind of give an overview of the AMA resolution and the white paper and answer any questions that you may have about it. I know there's been a lot of information put out about it. So I'll give you a brief update. The resolution that was to go to the AMA House, it went to the AMA House, but because the AMA House was virtual, they had to prioritize resolutions because they can only hear so many resolutions over the course of time they have allotted for their House of Delegates virtually. So we did not make the prioritization. That was the recommendation from the Resolutions Committee. There were 66 resolutions that were prioritized. I think there were about 68 that were not prioritized. And then those go on to consent agenda, meaning that anybody that wants the full AMA House to decide whether it should be heard can pull it off of consent. So 24 resolutions were pulled off of consent. One of those was ours. None of the resolutions pulled off of consent were voted to be heard. So it wasn't anything about the merits of the resolution. It was strictly what priority level the resolution had relative to the other resolutions they had to consider in the time frame they had. So the resolution was not heard at this just finished up AMA House of Delegates. So what that means is we'll probably go back, work on potentially changing the resolution a little bit, but they have their interim House of Delegates in November. That is anticipated to be in person. It'll be in Orlando. And at an in-person meeting, they hear all resolutions that are properly presented. So we anticipate the resolution, whatever form it's in, will be heard at this upcoming interim House of Delegates in November. Now, what accompanied the resolution was a white paper. The purpose of the white paper was to support the AMA resolution. In other words, it was to give the AMA delegates a reason why they should support the idea of approaching the National Board of Medical Examiners to allow podiatric students and graduates of accredited podiatric medical schools to have access to the USMLE. The USMLE is the United States Medical Licensing Exam. Currently, only either allopathic, osteopathic, or certain foreign medical schools have access to taking that test. What the white paper did, and I like to make the analogy kind of if the group of us were talking about, say, the greatest musicians of all time, we probably wouldn't agree on who all would make the list of the greatest musicians of all time. But we probably, if we sat down together, we could come up with some criteria such as number of gold records, number of albums sold, number of sold out concerts, whatever you want to say, a list of criteria that we would all agree that if all those boxes were checked, that musician or group should make the list of the greatest musicians of all time. And that's what the white paper does. There was disagreement amongst the four groups as currently who should be defined as a physician. APMA and ACFAS obviously believe that we are physicians. We have the same track of 4 years undergraduate, 4 years of podiatric medical school, 3 years of hospital-based residency training. That 4-4-3 model is consistent with allopathic and osteopathic medicine. So we believe that currently we are physicians. The orthopedic groups, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Foot and Ankle Society, the two other groups on the task force, they do not agree. They basically want proof that our education and training is comparable, and they see proof as being able to take and pass the United States Medical License Exam, the exam that they take. So this whole process is to gain access to the exam. After that, there's no definitive pathway that has to occur. We're not obligated to necessarily take the exam. It doesn't automatically become the licensing exam for podiatry. It can't, because every state legislature has written a scope of practice for podiatry, and licensure for that is dependent upon the APMLE, which is the National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners exam. So nothing changes in terms of licensing. What will happen in the future? We don't know. There's a lot of pathways this could take. It could eventually potentially take a pathway where our students are prepared, take and pass the USMLE, and in conjunction with that, we go to the state legislatures, we get them to, in the Physician Act, to now add the credentials of graduating from accredited podiatry school and passing the USMLE and completing a residency to be defined as a physician. That's the idea that some have for us to quote unquote gain a plenary license. That is so far down the line, it would take so much work. We don't know if that'll ever occur, but you're probably talking a minimum of 15, 20 years down the line. We may just get access to this test, prepare our students, they take step one, we show that we can pass it, and we say we're done. The osteopathic physicians still basically use the COMLEX examination for their licensing. That's their osteopathic licensing examination. If you look at the statistics in the USMLE, makes these public statistics, you can see who takes the exam each year, break it down to first-time test takers, repeat test takers, by allopathic, osteopathic, and foreign medical school graduates. It gives you the percentage number that took the test and their percent rate of passing. In 2020, it's for step one, I think it was something like 98% of allopathic, 96% of osteopathic, and about 90% of foreign medical school graduates took and passed the exam. If you look at step three, which is the final step, and you have to pass all three steps to be licensed, only in 2020, only 12 osteopathic physicians took step three of the USMLE. That means for licensing purposes, they were using the COMLEX exam. And one of the possible pathways that could end up is we could have some adjustments to the APMLE to satisfy the National Board of Medical Examiners, where it might be a comparable exam to the USMLE, like COMLEX is, where we'd still retain the podiatry components, but we would have the type of questions and the content of the questions that they feel should be on something that shows you have the ability to be recognized as a physician. Again, that could be way down the road. So where we are right now is, we'll probably have a resolution go back to the AMA House. The point of the resolution is to find a way to get the AMA on board to talk to the National Board of Medical Examiners, because they control the USMLE, and get them to give us access to the test, period. That's it. It doesn't set us up to have to do anything. So that's where we are. Happy to answer any questions, clear up any confusion there might be.
I read it, and to me, it has some further implications of that. I mean, I think it's fine to say that's all there is to it, but we don't really know where it's going to lead, and I think we should have a better plan and probably some better language in that bill, honestly, or the paper, or whatever you want to call it. I kind of agreed with some of the outlying states that were saying that it was a little questionable about how we had it worded, about them being physicians versus us being physicians, or why it was an advantage to us to take their boards. I mean, when we're not going to gain anything by it, but except for taking more boards, correct? No increase in our scope.
Well, that's not entirely correct. So if the allopathic and osteopathic physicians agree to recognize us as physicians, a lot of the battles that we have in the state legislatures go away. Because if they're recognizing us as physicians, they're not going to oppose us when we try to do certain things. Eventually, it could affect us in terms of dealing with insurance companies. We could potentially eventually be under a physician license, essentially. So have a plenary license with essentially no restrictions, but the same restrictions that allopathic and osteopathic physicians have. In other words, an osteopathic surgeon does not do heart surgery, because everybody practices to what their experience and training is. So there are some potential advantages down the road to stop having to battle every single time in the legislature, every time there's something with regards to a physician. On the federal level, a lot of times we get left out of bills because the federal legislators assume we're physicians. We went through that with COVID this year. We were left out of the bill that defined essential providers. And when we went back to Congress, it was basically, oh, we just thought you were a physician, so we thought you were included. We're not. When they use the term physician, we don't get included. So we had to go back. They did add us back in, but we constantly have to monitor and battle that. So there are some advantages to having the support of those allopathic and osteopathic organizations recognizing us as physicians.
Jim, let me ask a question. Aren't you all recognized as physicians under Medicare?
Yes, we're recognized as a physician on the Medicare, but that's only one Title 18. But in many, many states, including New York State, which I'm part of, we're not considered physicians. Only under Medicare is Medicare considered as a physician. That's a federal program.
Yeah, okay. But that's a physician with an asterisk, Diane, because we are in what's called, we're in category R3 under the Act. MDs and DOs are R1s. And then you've got chiropractors are defined as physicians, dentists are defined as physicians, all in different R categories. So if we were defined as R1 under Medicare, we would automatically be physicians under Medicaid. We wouldn't even need Title 19 legislation. So it's true, Medicare defines us as physicians, but there's a little bit of an asterisk. We use that to our advantage when we're talking to legislators, but if anybody digs into it very deeply, they'll see that there are different categories of physician under the Medicare definition.
Okay, I lobbied that for years for psychology, and I never realized there were different R's. Thank you for the education.
Dr. Christina, but sort of the origin of podiatry started with a lower level of training, like a lot of allopathic and osteopathic doctors did back in the day. Now we're up to a much higher level of training. As you mentioned earlier, I mean, we're doing 4 years of medical school, 3 years of a residency at minimum, sometimes with an added fellowship. And we're doing, you know, full lower, you know, foot and ankle reconstructive surgery in some states, even up to the level of the knee. To me, that's definitely adequate training.
Oh, no question. Nobody's arguing that we don't have adequate training. They're saying to us, prove it. And to them, prove it means take and pass our test. That's basically what they're saying at this point.
And what happens to those of us that have been out for a while and don't have the opportunity to take that and then thus can't be considered a physician by their standards?
Right. But as we discussed, the physician recognition at that point, the earliest point, won't really do anything for you except at a federal level. Say that we got moved, say that they decide, okay, if you can pass and take this test, you're recognized as a physician. And let's say that the majority of, you know, once the preparation's done and all of that, the majority of our students are taking and passing the test. And then we go and we get the Medicare definition, we're changed to R1. That would be by degree. So it would be MD, DO, DPM. It would not reflect any type of licensing exam. So that would actually benefit all podiatrists. As far as they're still not going to, until the Practice Act would be changed for physicians in a state, taking the passing all three parts of the USMLE would not gain them a plenary license. If and when that finally occurred, you're talking so far down the line that there may be a few that are still in a position that they weren't prepared, like you're saying, didn't have that education and opportunity to take and pass the exam, but they would be not that many, and it wouldn't change the current podiatry license that you have. You would still have a podiatry license. It would be different if at some point there was a plenary license available for those that could pass the USMLE, but it wouldn't impact you in terms of your ability to practice.
Catherine, you brought up a good point about the educational process. So if you survey our students today, they sit side by side with other IELTS students, especially in the first and second years. And they want to prove themselves that they have an equal type of education. So if you survey the students, they want to take USMLE. In fact, when I ask students that rotate through my program, externs, I ask them, how do you study for part one? You know what the answer is? We use USMLE as a guideline. So they utilize the test. They want to be on equal par with allopathic medicine. So you are correct. Our educational process has gotten better. We have to prove it to them. Because when they turn around and say, well, I understand what you're saying, prove it to us. And that's where the exams come in. Again, the white paper gives us the opportunity to sit for the exam. That's all it does. We're not changing our degrees. We're just allowing our students, our new podiatric students, to sit for the exam.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I had the advantage of being part of a graduate of Western University, which is completely integrated with an osteopathic medical school. And I did basically all the same rotations. The only thing I didn't do is deliver babies, which thank God I didn't have to do that. But I did plenty of, rectal exams, everything else, everything under the sun, and probably more ER and orthopedic rotations and general surgery rotations than the average medical student did. So, I felt like I was more than prepared to go into residency and do surgery on people for sure.
Catherine hears every day from the students, every day. And that's why we have to gain access to USMLE. I agree with you 110%. While we put everybody to sleep.
Does anybody else have anything to add to it or questions about it?
Podiatric medical schools are taking the USMLE, is there a plan to make those results public, or is it more of an internal sort of retrospective testing that's going on?
So that's another misconception that's out there. Nobody is taking the USMLE that's a podiatric medical student. What they are taking is what's called the Comprehensive Basic Sciences Exam. That is an exam that's available through the National Board of Medical Examiners. It's open to anybody that wants to take it. So there's no restrictions on that. It's kind of a prep exam for the USMLE. Medical students use it to judge their preparation where they are in terms of step one of USMLE. So what they've been taking is this Comprehensive Basic Sciences Exam, CBSE. Now, there was a crosswalk in the scores from the CBSE to your potential score on the USMLE, then you could know what the passing score was on USMLE to get an idea of where you stand. USMLE step one, I believe, is going to pass fail. So I don't know how that's going to impact the Comprehensive Basic Sciences exam ability to predict performance on the USMLE. But what happened is the California school took it completely unprepared. They basically just second year students just went in, took the exam. It was just, they wanted to see where they were. John Benson was the dean at the time. We supported the program. We agreed that the results would be kept confidential because they had no preparation for it. At the Western, they've been doing a pilot project where they started with a little preparation for the second years before they took it. And then gradually as new classes have come in, they're taking the prep right alongside of the osteopathic students at the Western to prep for step one of the USMLE. But as agreed upon, we have kept those results confidential as well. It's allowing the Western to kind of gauge what kind of changes potentially they might have to make to prep their students to be able to take and pass the exam. But nobody, you cannot take the USMLE unless you're enrolled at a allopathic or osteopathic medical school or a approved foreign medical school.
Thank you for that clarification. That's actually good to know.
Yeah.
I have a question. For an older practitioner, is it going to discriminate from insurance carriers saying, all right, he didn't take the U.S. medical license exam, so therefore he's just a podiatrist and doesn't get reimbursed as much as someone who had taken that or anything like that? Are we going to be segregated of who we are?
I don't think so. I mean, we would fight that certainly if it happened. But if you think about it now, usually when we're discriminated against in terms of reimbursement by insurance company, it's based on degree, not on licensing. So they may pay an orthopedic physician more for procedure than a podiatrist, but they don't look at any other factors for the podiatrist. I mean, there's podiatrists out there that never had a residency program, went through certain processes to learn surgery, got their certification for surgery, are on hospital staffs doing surgery all the time. And then you've got 3-year residency trained podiatrists or plus fellowship trained, and they're getting reimbursed the same by insurance companies. They're not being discriminated against based on training. So I would not think that licensure would have that impact as well. Osteopathic physicians are probably at the COMLEX exam for their licensing exam. To my knowledge, an orthopedic osteopathic physician doesn't get reimbursed any differently than an orthopedic allopathic physician. So I don't think that would occur. If it did, we would certainly make sure that we fought that to make sure. I mean, we fight now for, we don't think you should be reimbursed based upon your degree. So whether it's an MD, whether it's an orthopod, whether it's a dermatologist, no matter what, we basically fight that if you're trained and licensed to do a procedure, then everybody should be reimbursed at the same level. And we fight those battles all the time. Fortunately, in Medicare, that's the way Medicare is set up. Everybody gets, if you can build the CPT code, you get what's going right for the CPT code in your particular jurisdiction for Medicare.
The other point too is that this evolution will take time to occur. It's not gonna happen overnight. So again, if AP means there's any changes happening down the road, which takes the older practitioner, puts them along the side, we will fight for that. And like Jim said, they don't ask you what test you take. They look at your degree, and that's what we're fighting for right now. So again, we're talking way down the road, guys.
But those are legitimate concerns. Yeah. We want to make sure that we don't leave anybody behind, that nobody's discriminated against, that you're able to continue to practice and be reimbursed in a fair method. But we also have to look to the future and what's best for the profession and best for our upcoming graduates. Any other questions? Curtis, I think you're muted, or we didn't hear you.
Okay, try again, Curtis. Did y'all hear that at all?
No.
Can you relay it, Diane?
Yeah. Curtis said, you know, it may help the future students, but this is something that's got to happen.
That's why we're doing it. We have to look at our profession. We have to have our profession continue to grow. I've been a podiatrist for over 40 years, and I take pride in my profession. And I want to see our profession reach the next level. And that's why we have to go forward with this.
Okay, any other questions? Well, thank you for your time this evening, and we're always available. You know, you can call, email us. We're happy to talk. If you come up with further questions, we're happy to talk with you about it.
And I'm your liaison, so if you have any questions, just feel free to reach out to me, and I'll bring it back to the board.
Thank you.
Dr. Christine, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
guys.
Bye.